This is an ABC podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The World Today. I'm Thomas Ariti. Coming up this Wednesday, the coronavirus creeps further across the country, with cases now showing up in Queensland. They're also worried in Sydney, with more areas affected and people scared about the future.
It does worry me. I mean, we've all been trying to do the right thing, and there's obviously people that are being complacent and spreading COVID around.
And the airline industry predicts international travel will take even longer than expected to recover. Well, it was virus-free for weeks, but now Queensland has an emerging problem as two women have shown up with the virus. Now, it appears they've come back from Victoria, broken the rules and not self-isolated, and the big fear is that the problems Victoria's facing will soon spread across the country. Rachel Mealy begins our coverage today from Brisbane. Afternoon, Rach. So there have been some new cases reported today. They're the first in that state for a while. What do we know?
Good afternoon, Tom. Well, the Health Minister, Stephen Miles, says two 19-year-old women have returned from Victoria via Sydney last week. They're both now in hospital, having tested positive to COVID-19. One of the young women works at the Parklands Christian College in Logan, south of Brisbane, and that school's been closed today for cleaning and a testing centre's been set up at the school. Now, the Minister says that there's a large amount of contact tracing to be done because these women have been moving about for the past week and just in their community, and that's included going to restaurants, going to shopping centres and even to a church. Now, there is a police investigation that's been launched into how this has happened. It seems that they may have lied on their forms when they were entering Queensland, and they should have declared that they'd been in Victoria and should have gone into hotel quarantine.
Yeah, now, aged care, it's emerging as a big issue across the country. The Queensland government has also locked down some nursing homes in Brisbane. Is that connected to these women?
Well, Tom, there doesn't appear to be a direct link at this stage, but the Chief Health Officer, Jeanette Young, says she's acting fast in order to limit the possible impact, and she's asked that all nursing homes in the Metro South Division, which is essentially all of the suburbs in southern Brisbane and south of Brisbane itself, should be placed under lockdown immediately. Now, that lockdown will be in place for at least the next 48 hours while they get a better picture on how widespread this all is. Here's what the Chief Health Officer had to say.
These two young women have been out in the community for 8 days whilst unwell. So please, anyone who lives in that Logan, Acacia Ridge, Springfield Lakes areas, if you have any symptoms at all, if you're concerned, please come forward immediately and get tested.
Queensland's Chief Health Officer, Dr. Jeanette Young, and Rachel Mealy is with me. Rach, the borders, they've been an issue for a long time, and the Queensland borders will once again be closed to Sydney residents. What's the situation?
Yeah, that's right. The Queensland Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, has declared that Greater Sydney is now a hotspot. So 31 local government areas of Sydney have been added to the list of hotspots, and travel bans will come into place from this Saturday. Now, as you said, the decisions that the Queensland government has made about the borders have been hotly debated in the past few months. But this time, it seems the Prime Minister is on board. He's described it as a wise decision, Tom.
Okay, our reporter in Brisbane, Rachel Mealy, thank you. New South Wales has its own concerns about the spread of the virus. Authorities have reported 19 new cases today, and they're spread across Australia's largest city, Sydney. Now, two of them are returned overseas travellers in hotel quarantine. Other cases are in an emerging cluster in the harbourside suburb of Potts Point, and a pop-up testing clinic is being set up in Rushcutters Bay Park. Our reporter David Sparks is there. He joins me live now. Afternoon, David. So this is a cluster that has surprised a lot of people. What's the reaction like there today?
Well, the reaction right where I am now, Tom, is not particularly unusual. It's sunny for the first time after a few days of heavy rain, and a lot of people are out and about walking as they would, although they are keeping their distance, and a small number of them are wearing masks. As you say, a pop-up testing clinic is to be set up here. It's less than a kilometre from a couple of restaurants in the area where they've been confirmed cases. That's the Apollo restaurant and the Thai Rock restaurant here, not to be confused with the other Thai Rock restaurant in southwest Sydney, which also has confirmed cases. People I spoke to here say that they are conscious of the new cases, though, and they are increasingly worried.
You know, I went out yesterday and quite a lot of young people were wearing masks, and I thought, it is a hotspot area and getting more so, maybe we should get serious. Suddenly think, okay, we had lockdown and all that, was a whole different thing, you were really supposed to stay in and all that. But it's a bit salutary when you get out now and you think, you know what, it's back in the community, but we don't have lockdown, therefore maybe we should do a bit more ourselves.
Do you think you might get tested?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've been stuck in the house because of the rainy weather, and this is the first time I've been out. I mean, I've been trying to keep my distance. I have no symptoms. There's no reason to.
There's been a few cases in this area, more Potts Point. Does it worry you or not?
Definitely. It does worry me. I mean, we've all been trying to do the right thing, and there's obviously people that are being complacent and spreading COVID around.
So, David, what are authorities saying at the moment?
Well, the Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, has again today emphasised how serious the situation is for New South Wales right now to keep ahead of the game, so to speak. Another 18,000 tests were conducted yesterday. She's also announced today that there will be new restrictions in place on gyms. That is essentially that they will have to have a COVID marshal in place to make sure that the social distancing and the other precautions are being taken seriously.
And masks, they've obviously emerged as a critical issue. They're mandatory in most cases in Melbourne now if you're going outside. Is there a suggestion that New South Wales, you know, might go the same way as Victoria with masks?
Well, it is a discussion that keeps simmering along. And today we've heard from the Committee for Sydney. That's a very influential group of, I guess you would call them business leaders mostly, and other significant leaders around Sydney. And today they're calling for more widespread use of masks. They're not saying that they should be used everywhere. For example, they're not calling for them to be used in restaurants where people have to eat or outdoors, but they are saying that there are settings in confined indoor spaces where new rules should be enforced, where people have to use masks. And they're saying that that is really the best way to avoid a more, in their words, draconian shutdown of the economy if this thing gets out of hand.
Okay, David Sparks reporting there from Rushcutters Bay Park in Sydney. Thank you. Another 9 people have died in Victoria. 7 were residents of private aged care homes. There may be a glimmer of hope for the state, though. The number of coronavirus infections has dropped again today to 295. That's the first time in more than a week that the daily tally has been below 300. Samantha Donovan has been listening to the briefing by the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews. She joins me now. Afternoon, Sam. So what more can you tell us about the people who have died?
Well, very sad news, Tom, to hear that another 9 elderly people have died. 2 were in their 90s, 5 were in their 80s, 1 in their 70s and 1 in their 60s. The Premier, Daniel Andrews, as you mentioned, has pointed out this morning that 7 of them were residents of aged care homes in the private sector. In terms of some of the other figures today, Tom, 307 people are now in hospital in Victoria. 41 of them are in the intensive care unit. In terms of the number of active cases, it's close to 5,000 at 4,839. 804 of those cases are in the aged care sector. That's both residents and staff. 502 of the active cases are health workers. Now, one interesting figure that the Premier pointed out today is the number of regional cases. Some good news there in that the number of active cases in regional Victoria is 195. He said those numbers are still low and they're confident they have the situation in hand. The Premier has been updating us on the situation in aged care, and he paid tribute to the nurses stepping in to help.
So far, nurses from hospitals have filled some 400 shifts. That is a massive, massive task. And to each and every one of those nurses and personal care workers who are beyond that 400, who have gone in to very challenging environments that are in crisis, to support vulnerable residents, to just get on and get it done. I just want to say thank you so much on behalf of every single Victorian. I often describe our health professionals as heroes. They are. We all know that. We don't need any more evidence of that. And yet every day we see more and more examples that are, they're very, very impressive. It's hard to find the words to describe their commitment, their courage, and the work that they do.
Daniel Andrews. Now, Sam, is the Premier optimistic that the number of infections in Victoria will continue to fall?
Well, he's still taking a very cautious approach, Tom. We know that with those sort of numbers, still close to 300, many more people, unfortunately, are going to die. The total death toll now in Victoria stands at 92. Mr. Andrews has again this morning emphasised that people must not go to work if they have symptoms. They must get tested because this community transmission is still a worry. He also updated us on the Defence Force personnel who've been going out and helping health department officials track down people who've tested positive so that they can then start the contact tracing process. One of the rather alarming figures is that those teams of health officials and ADF personnel have turned up to 29 homes and not been able to find the person who has tested positive. So all those cases have been referred to the police.
Okay, Samantha Donovan reporting there. Thank you. On ABC Radio across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks very much for your company. Well, it's another history-making day for Australia's economy, and all for the wrong reasons. Consumer inflation has tumbled deeply into negative territory, going backwards by almost 2% in the second quarter of this year. It's the biggest quarterly contraction since 1948 as the economic fallout from the pandemic continues to bite. I'm joined now by the ABC's senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Afternoon, Pete. So the biggest quarterly fall in 72 years. I guess that really underscores the economic twilight zone Australia's economy is confronting at the moment.
Well, it certainly is a twilight zone, Tom, and 1948 was a big year in post-World War II Australia. The first Holden car, the FX, was about to roll off the assembly line. The then Labor Prime Minister Ben Chifley, who christened the first Holden, still had petrol rationing in place. Is that sort of context in the prelude to Australia's prosperity in the 1950s that really articulates the health, economic and social impacts of the pandemic we're seeing now? So the consumer price index for the second quarter of this year went negative, plunging by 1.9%, a little less than expected, making a drop of 0.4% over the year. It's the first negative inflation reading since 1998. The biggest price fall was in childcare, not surprisingly, down 95% after the federal government made it free during the lockdown. Petrol down 19% after global oil prices crashed early this year. And education costs down 6% with students learning from home because of the lockdown.
And how likely are we to see a repeat of plunging inflation in the next quarterly reading?
Well, Tom, those are big two factors. Childcare and petrol prices have now pretty much reversed, so those two factors could see inflation recover. It might be pretty tepid, though. The free childcare ended at the beginning of this month. Petrol prices are back on the rise, as motorists will have noticed, and schools are largely back to normal. That's reflected in the Reserve Bank's preferred measure of trimmed mean inflation, which cuts out those volatile factors. That's still very weak, up just a tenth of 1% in the quarter, 1.4% over the year, which means the Reserve Bank's target band of 2 to 3% is years away. The Reserve Bank Governor, Dr. Philip Lowe, has been managing expectations, warning earlier this year that negative inflation was pretty likely.
Okay, the ABC's Peter Ryan there. Thank you. Well, as we've covered, the collapse in international air travel due to COVID-19 has led to widespread job losses and economic pain for those in aviation and more broadly in tourism and other sectors. Now there's confirmation from the airline industry itself that the downturn will be longer and deeper than previously expected. Nick Grimm has been taking a look.
Air travellers at Dusseldorf Airport line for COVID-19 testing before reaching the arrivals gate. Germany is one of several nations experiencing what's being called Europe's second wave of infections. The airline industry prefers testing of travellers to quarantine lockdowns, like Britain has just slapped on travellers returning from Spain. But the International Air Transport Association, IATA, also wants governments to help with the cost. Director General Alexander De Junior.
It should be paid by government, because otherwise it could be too costly for many passengers, you know, to pay for tests.
The cost of the pandemic continues to add up for airlines too, with IATA now revising its expectations for a recovery. It's now warning the pain will last a whole year longer than previously hoped.
Normal times to the 2019 figures, 1 year later than in our previous forecast, so it's more in 2023, 2024 than before, in which we were forecasting that for 2022, 2023.
And that prediction has the global industry urging governments to extend financial support measures to help soften the blow of what it admits will be a future that will almost certainly see wide-scale industry restructuring and bankruptcies. And here, industry observers like Neil Hansford from Strategic Aviation Solutions believe the revised forecasts are still failing to capture the real picture.
It is being overly optimistic, and they're probably playing to the shareholders and the people that they're trying to borrow money from at the moment, trying to say that we're going to be able to pay you a lot earlier. You know, let's face it, IATA is a grouping of the airlines and obviously driven by the very large airlines, particularly the four in the US who are in real trouble even after the enormous grants that were given by the Trump administration. So if America in this business has a bit of a cold, we all catch it.
And what's that going to mean for Australia's aviation industry?
Well, I think we're in a bit of a different bubble. So we've really prepared ourselves in a better position to come out of this. And if the Victorian debacle hadn't happened, I was seeing predictions of Qantas flying some international routes as early as January, which I think with what's happened in Victoria has pushed that back to the middle of 2021. But they won't operate a network throughout the world. It'll be very selective. There'll be the New Zealand bubble and the Pacific Island bubble. Then you'll have people using non-stop flights through to the UK. But I would think the events of Victoria must really be concerning people in Qantas head office who could see the light at the tunnel. But again, you've seen the 747s go, and you basically may never see the 380s return to Qantas service. And once they're away for 3 years, it'll be problematical whether they ever come.
Neil Hansford from Strategic Aviation Solutions and Nick Grimm with that report. The increase in the number of hotspots across Australia is being mirrored around the world, with more countries reporting a surge in cases. At the same time, US President Donald Trump has again touted the benefits of the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine for COVID patients, which has ignited a new backlash against misinformation on social media. In fact, his comments come a day after he and his son shared a video about the drug that was quickly taken down by Twitter and Facebook. Barney Porter has the latest.
Appropriately dressed in white lab coats, several people claiming to be doctors gathered on the steps of the Supreme Court to claim in a video hydroxychloroquine does work as both a preventative measure and a cure. They're from a group calling itself America's Frontline Doctors. Certainly, the president is convinced. Again.
I happen to think it works in the early stages. I think frontline medical people believe that too, some, many. And so we'll take a look at it. But the one thing we know, it's been out for a long time. It doesn't cause problems. I had no problem. I had absolutely no problem. Felt no different. Didn't feel good, bad, or indifferent. I tested, as you know, it didn't get me. And it's not going to hopefully hurt anybody.
Not true, say several august institutions. The Journal of Infectious Disease says it doesn't reduce the risk of hospitalisation. The Uni of Minnesota Medical School says it's no better than a placebo. The World Health Organization says there's no proof it's effective as a treatment or prevents COVID-19. And the US Food and Drug Administration has also warned it may cause heart problems and other health issues. Last month, the FDA even revoked the drug's emergency use authorization to treat COVID-19. But the true believers don't believe any of it, especially the leading light of America's frontline doctors, Stella Emanuel, who it seems is a personal favourite of the president.
I think they're very respected doctors. There was a woman who was spectacular in her statements about it, that she's had tremendous success with it. And they took her voice off. I don't know why they took her off, but they took her off. Maybe they had a good reason, maybe they didn't, I don't know.
It may have had something to do with the fact that Dr. Stella has form. She's also claimed DNA from aliens is being used in the development of medicines to prevent people from becoming religious. And there's the one that the uterine disorder, endometriosis, is actually caused by women dreaming of having sex with demons. The video had been live-streamed by the conservative media outlet Breitbart and viewed more than 14 million times. It was also shared on Twitter by the president and many of his supporters, including his son, Donald Jr. But social media is fighting back. Facebook, YouTube and Twitter have removed the videos. Twitter has told the Washington Post they were in violation of its COVID-19 misinformation policy. Donald Jr. has also been suspended from tweeting for 12 hours after he posted it on his account. But there's another point of irritation for the president. At the same presser, he was asked why America's leading expert in infectious diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci, is more popular than he is. The president was obviously not impressed.
Why don't I have a high approval rating with respect, and the administration, with respect to the virus? So it sort of is curious. A man works for us, with us, very closely, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx, also highly thought of, and yet they're highly thought of, but nobody likes me. It can only be my personality, that's all.
The World Today has tried to get a comment from Dr. Stella, but we've had a devil of a time trying to reach her.
Barney Porter. Now to the case of an Australian academic jailed in Iran, which hasn't dominated headlines in the way you might have expected it to. That's because, on the whole, until now, the Australian government and Carly Moore Gilbert's family, friends and colleagues have chosen to try and handle the matter away from the spotlight. Confirmation, however, that the dual Australian-British national has been transferred to one of Iran's most notorious prisons has led some to question whether that approach is working at all. Barbara Miller has this report.
Evin Prison in Tehran, where Carly Moore Gilbert was being held, was tough enough. But the remote Karchak prison to which she's now been transferred is in a league of its own.
We've had many testimonies of people who have gone through there describing a nightmare.
Hadi Ghraemi is the head of the Centre for Human Rights in Iran.
The reason is that it's overcrowded, insanitary. You can't get a bed to sleep on. The food is not edible. Denial of health care is routine. And basically danger of violence from prison guards as well as other prisoners seem to be a routine way of life in there.
The case of the Melbourne University lecturer has flown largely under the radar since she was arrested after attending a conference in Iran 2 years ago and sentenced to 10 years in prison on espionage charges. Now friends and colleagues are beginning to speak out. Dr. Jessie Moritz is a lecturer in Middle East Studies at the ANU. She spoke to RN Breakfast about why she's changing her stance.
The reality of this process is that it's been incredibly secretive, and I've been respecting that process for as long as possible in an attempt to try to protect Kylie and to try to respect the wishes of her family. But I'm also a Middle East expert, and I've been following the case, and I've been following the cases of others in Iran, and the transfer to Karchak prison suggests that the softly approach is unfortunately not working.
Earlier this year, in letters smuggled out of prison, Carly Moore Gilbert wrote of her deteriorating mental health, feelings of abandonment, and said she'd rejected an offer to work for Iran, saying she was not and never would be a spy. Hadi Ghaemi from Iran's Centre for Human Rights says Australia needs to urgently change tack to secure her release.
What I'm disappointed is that the Australian government hasn't built enough leverage with its allies, whether it's UK or other governments in the region that have good relations with Iran, to seek her release. They have very much done this in complete secrecy, and the reason they have given for 2 years has been that quiet diplomacy is proving effective. I don't see what they have to show for that.
The ANU's Dr. Jessie Moritz agrees.
The reality of this process is that it is going to be difficult. It's going to cost a lot diplomatically and financially to get Kylie out. Okay. And my concern is that the Australian government needs to be willing to pay that cost. And without public pressure on the Australian government, I'm not sure that they will.
In a statement, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade confirmed that Kylie Moore-Gilbert has been transferred to Karchak Prison. DFAT said Australia held Iran responsible for her safety and well-being and was urgently seeking access to her.
Barbara Miller, and that's all from the World Today team for this Wednesday. I'm Thomas Arete. Stay safe and have a lovely afternoon.
Hi, I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. This time last year, one of the worst bushfire seasons ever seen in Australia was just getting started. The Black Summer fires ended up claiming 33 lives, burning through 12 million hectares, and killing or displacing almost 3 billion animals. The big question is, will this summer be a repeat?
Today on The Signal, the science of bushfire prediction. What do the forecasts say? How much faith should we place in them? And are we doing enough to prevent more horrors in future? Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.